what's up? My name is Nick Harris. I am, I'd say, a musician first. I play drums in a band called Armed for Apocalypse, and I am a yoga teacher, and I teach and practice a lot of yoga. I am also, or was also, in working towards being a navigation specialist or a housing specialist for an organization called Do Good Multnomah in Portland that supports and serves the houseless community in Portland. I'm a student at St. Mary's College, and at the end of the day, I want to be the best person I can possibly be, live my best life.
Okay, cool. Hang on 1 second, just adjusting the volume. Okay, and you came back to school, like you started undergraduate school years ago and came back as an older student. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that and what your age is?
Yeah, absolutely. I started in fall 1997, and which is a long time ago. But yeah, back then, my priorities were significantly different than they are now. I played rugby for 5 seasons at St. Mary's, and I also played 1 year of American football. And during those 5 years here, I was a really good partier. That was my priority. In short, just to save some time here, I basically did everything I could just to survive. I never put forth enough effort to excel at anything other than my sports and partying. So even music took a backseat back then. My priorities were significantly different. And then in February 12th, 2017, I quit drinking and smoking pot and all the things, and I've been sober ever since then. And through that sobriety, I have found new priorities, and I found a new faith, and I found, I just put my music first, I put my life first, my health first, and I put service first. And through all that, I've reprioritized education because I want to get my master's in social work, so hopefully I can ideally get my LCSW at some point, and then go into teaching yoga and mindfulness into prisons and juvenile detention facilities, group homes, and just any place where people have been underserved and can utilize the gift of yoga and mindfulness and the power of their own breath and the power of their own mind, and to better serve themselves going forward and possibly making more informed decisions, and make it so they don't end up back into these institutions, in the future.
Okay, Nick, that's awesome. Because you have a lot to share, and I'll keep it a little broader, and I'll do a longer piece that'll just be like a podcast with your story, and then I'll also have like the shorter one, if that's okay.
Dude, live your life. Just do whatever you want to do.
Okay, cool. I'm just going to ask away then. So I'm just going to calculate that you're probably in your early 40s and you decided to come back to school at this time. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm 42. I've been going back to school semester at a time, online class at a time since 2018. And I finally worked myself back into a position where I could return to St. Mary's. And this past spring, I guess it would be 2021, I had to submit my application, and then do some resubmission letter, and then I got accepted back in June and started in August. So, yeah.
Okay, cool. So there are a lot of people who might drop out, or they might walk across the stage and have something to finish, and then they just don't. So what was it for you that made you decide that you needed to go back and kind of finish up that chapter?
Well, the sobriety was one thing. I just knew there was more to life than just being sober, so that was definitely one thing that was eating at me. I was like, I know there's more, and I have more to offer than just, sobriety. So there was that piece. But then also, it was eating at me that I had started something and I hadn't finished it. And, I never would correct people. I would never be like, oh, you went to St. Mary's, you graduated from St. Mary's. I'd just be like, yeah. That was what I kind of did. I think I really believed in my mind that I had finished, because I just wanted to block it out of my mind for so many years. I started working for Do Good Multnomah in Portland, and that's when I realized that service was like huge in my life. And then I also worked for Odyssey Teams in Chico, where my like mentor, best friend, whatever you want to call him, Scott Amick, like showed me that I had something to offer to youth and speaking to youth. So putting all those pieces together, I realized that I wanted to get a master's in social work and then dive deeper into these underserved, you know, communities. And I can't get a master's without a bachelor's. So yeah, that's kind of,
yeah,
that was the driving force. So
that's awesome. Yeah. And so what was significant about February 2017? Because that's when you said the sobriety mission began, or
yeah,
what was significant about that date?
Well, February 12th is my day one of sobriety, and I mean, my dad had passed the year before. That reunited me with one of my best friends growing up and all through high school and college, and we reunited, and she is a medium, and I don't know, I quit smoking pot, like, that Thanksgiving. So now I guess Thanksgiving 2016, I quit smoking pot, and 4 days later my dad entered my dreams, and it was super clear and vivid. And then I talked to her about it, my friend Elena, and she was like, yeah, you know, your dad is a very powerful spirit, and he's going to be present in your life as long as you allow for it, you know. And when, by quitting smoking pot, like, I had cleared the fog for him to like enter, I guess, you know. But once that happened, then she had a dream, and my dad came to her and was like, yo, you know, it wasn't about anything other than like my drinking, and it wasn't about my health. It was all about, like, not being the best I could be, not living my best life. And it was all about music and how I wasn't playing enough music, and how, I should be doing like mentorship type things. And I wasn't. So that all, once I processed all of that, my mom and my friend Elena helped me process all of that. And it was a simple thing where my mom said one sentence, and it was just like, well, Nicholas, this message, Elena's message, means nothing if you don't do anything about it. I processed and I processed, and then that was it. Like, by the time I realized it was my time, I just quit drinking. I didn't do AA or anything. I'm not knocking it. I think, you know, 12-step program is wonderful. But I just decided that I wanted to have music be my life, and I didn't want anything else, because I had never given myself a full opportunity to really pursue it. And that was it. So yeah, February 12th is my sobriety day. It'll be 5 years this coming February, and my whole life and the life of all those around me is significantly better now.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks for sharing that. And then I'm wondering if you'd be comfortable talking a little bit about your identity and the ways, and we're going to pivot to some of the social justice work that you're talking about. And, you know, you mentioned working with the incarcerated or even formerly incarcerated populations. So that is going to bring us to this other issue. Can you talk a little bit about, your racial identity and what it has been like for you as a man, a person of color, navigating the world in which we live in terms of, you know, now I know you're in the La Mirinda area, but you've also been in Portland, which is also a very white community. So I'm just curious if you could talk about that piece and what it's been like to be you, just living in this world. It's kind of a big question, but take it whichever way you'd like.
I get it. I appreciate it. Okay. Yeah. Like, my intersectionality is interesting because I am an African American. That is, you know, I have dreads. I have like tattoos on my hands and my neck and other places and things. And I also play in a metal band. I grew up in a place called Redding, California, which is, you know, there's not very much diversity there. I've lived in, you know, Moraga, obviously, from St. Mary's, and then I lived in Portland. And yeah, so I have all these different kind of cross bridges here. Yeah, you know, also growing up in Reading, I had a lot of my best friends were, you know, white, and, you know, I learned a lot. I don't know, I guess I didn't really understand like what like privilege was and like where I stood on it or in it, you know. I just didn't really get it, because all my friends were just my friends, and, you know, like, I didn't really know any better. And then as I got older, and as I also started, I guess, changing a little bit to where I am now, and realizing that, you know, to some, I may appear to be abrasive or whatever until I speak. And then, I don't know, I try, like, for example, running in Moraga is a very funny thing.
What happens?
Well, for the most part, I think that it throws people off. I had to do this thing in my critical race theory class where we had to write these race logs, and we talk about these situations where you, like, you know, you engage or you are a witness or a victim of some racist activities. And I just realized that, like, this area in Moraga is a lot older. And they're not necessarily, not everyone, I'm not going to ever say that, but it was like, I've definitely witnessed situations where people are just not interested and not, like, and they kind of avoid me or whatever. And, like, I also realize what I look like and how I appear. So I've gotten really good at softening myself up. And what I mean by that is saying hello and, like, opening the door for people and stuff like that. I don't know. It's just, like, little things that I do to make people, like, not just look at the surface and then realize that I'm, like, a nice dude, you know? I'm like, and it's a whole thing that I've definitely, I guess I didn't really think about doing it consciously, but I've just learned over all these years to be like, hey, what's up, man? How you doing? You know, like, I just talk to every single person I interact with, and I just, or encounter, I just, you know, this is like my softening mechanism I've used. So people don't just see the tattoos and stuff, you know, so they, in a quick interaction, they can see more that I have, or see that I have more to offer than just that, you know. It's been interesting, though, I'm not gonna lie. It's been definitely interesting, and definitely had some interesting things happening on tour, you know, because I'm in a metal band and I'm a black dude, and there's a lot of stuff where, like, you know, I get it from both ends, though. Like, sometimes I'm not black enough for my you know, so for people that are like, well, you play in a rock band, it's like, yeah, I mean, does that matter what color I am to play in a rock band? But I mean, I get it on both sides. I don't let it bug me anymore. I am what I am, and I am a product of my environment, but I'm also proud of who I am. And the music that I play fuels my soul. So I really don't care what people think, but
yeah, that's amazing. I mean, I think it's such a powerful example in kind of like this, the space in between where not knowing exactly which world you fit into, but it sounds like also just being okay with it is what I'm hearing from you. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't care. Like, I'm not going to, like, I mean, my family, for example, all my cousins and everybody like that, they have completely accepted me for who I am, and I appreciate it. But I remember being younger, like, when I first got introduced to rock and roll, like, my freshman year of high school, was buying, like, Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins, Radiohead, and I got, like, my dad bought me this Jimi Hendrix record that, like, changed my life. And I had stopped buying all the hip-hop and rap at the time. And then I remember the 4th of July summer, every year we'd have this big event at my family's house, at my mom's house, and it was always huge, and all my family members came. And, like, I didn't have any new music. So I was playing, like, the hip-hop and stuff from, like, last summer. They're like, what? I'm like, Nick, you don't have any new music? What, you still listening to this? And I was, like, almost embarrassed. Like, yeah, because I bought this new Nirvana record that I was too embarrassed to show these people because I didn't know how they would accept it. But now everyone accepts it now. But that's, like, a part of my life that I had to, like, learn how to just own myself, like, just own it. Like, this is what I am. And, you know, if you don't like it, you don't have to hang out with me. We can listen. You don't have to listen to my music or my band, you know? So it's interesting, though.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. And I think there's like some greater societal kind of lessons that people could even glean from this lesson and, you know, of what you're sharing. This is a different type of music than what you're talking about, but have you heard the music from the group called Gangsta Grass?
I haven't, but that means nothing. I listen to, like, the same stuff over and over again.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to share it with you because I stumbled onto them when I was visiting Wisconsin this summer, and it's, like, a couple of black guys who rap, and then there's these white guys, and one of the black guys also play the fiddle, and they take grass and hip hop and together, like, and so the grass players, like, they would totally reach this different demographic traditionally, or that's what people would expect, and then they put it together, and they're kind of, everybody's forced to rethink all the ideas they have about each other, and that's the whole point of them. So,
it's wonderful. I love it. Yeah. Please share with me. Yeah, it's awesome. I'm down for any kind of new music that, as long as it's got soul, it's got a place with me, you know? So,
yeah, no, I love it. It's kind of like what you're talking about right now. So, okay. So then you're kind of giving me a sampling of some of the different things that you've encountered, or maybe second looks or questions and that kind of thing in terms of racial profiling from police. How about that? What's your experience been like in terms of getting pulled over by police and such?
Okay. Well, I'll tell you this. I'm in a touring band that tours often, and we have California plates. So we're like, we're this big white band with a big white trailer, and, you know, we are a big sore thumb on the road, and we have California plates in a lot of places. We get pulled over a lot. You know, like, it's not like horribly, like, we're not like harassed, but it's always like, what are you guys doing? You know, especially like going through Mexico, going to Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, like all these like bordering states, we always get pulled over. We get pulled over often by Border Patrol. It's okay. Like, literally, it's like, I don't feel harassed or anything, but I have also been pulled over just, you know, I mean, I'm 42. I've been driving since I was 16, you know, so I've been pulled over a couple of times, but I will say I have gotten tickets in life, but I've never had any kind of real situation where, like, I was afraid. Like, first off, let me just start with this. Like, when I was a kid, I would hear my mother constantly grilling my brother, older brother, like, you can pull over the road, we do whatever they tell you. Just don't argue, don't be smart mouth, whatever. She always, like, grill and said, grill, always, always, always. So I always had those lessons from my mom, but
it's like a survival lesson, right? That's what she was trying to do with you.
Yeah, well, that was just my sister. I'm sorry, my brother's. Like, I listened to these messages, like, because my brother's 11 years older than me. So I would just hear my mother always grilling, like, you know, hey, we can pull over, you know, just do what they tell you, da, 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 you know. And she was just preventative measures. But then on top of that, I grew up, like, one of my best friends to this day is a man named Blaine Goodeth, and he was now he's a retired sergeant of the Highway Patrol. His son, Kyle Goodeth, was my best friend growing up, and then he passed away when we were 19, so that got me closer with Blaine. But long story short, so like from like 8 years old, 9 years old, I had been in the presence of a police officer, right, and his partners and all the things that they did. So we learned at a very young age on what you do when you get pulled over, how you interact with police officers. And it wasn't anything other than he was like teaching us the respect that like police officers were, like, you know, wanted or warranted or whatever you want to call it. And then like how to basically protect ourselves. And it was pretty cut and dry. It was like little things like, when we get pulled over, take the keys, turn the car off, take the keys out of the ignition, put the keys on the dashboard. And, you know, then it's like, when you're driving, don't have your wallet in your back pocket or your bag or whatever. Always have your wallet, like, in the cup holder where it's easily accessible. So if you do get pulled over, you have your ID right there. You don't have to go fidgeting around. It's like, bam. So there's that. And then, like, the quick thing is, like, the second you get pulled over, like, instantly pull over. You know, like, where you can pull over safely, let the officer know that you have seen him or seen them and you are pulling over. And then the quick one, another one is like, your hands are at 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock on the steering wheel, and you do not move them until you're told to. So these are like these lessons that I learned. So I remember getting pulled over when I was 16 years old, driving to school, I was speeding. I just dropped all these lessons, and it was like, I didn't get a ticket. And then it was like, the conversation was really cool. And then at all these times our band is toured, I do these things. And all the time, we always get, the officer goes, can I open the trailer? And I go, yes, officer, may I get the keys? And they're right here, and they always let me do it. And I always go open it for them, and they go, oh, you're a band. And 100% of the time, they start talking about our band, and we always get off. You know, it's never a problem. But they just need to, like, reassure that we're actually what we say we are, you know? But I guess the point of this story is, like, I learned at a very young age from the most reliable source on how to protect myself and getting pulled over. And when I do and have in the past, even my bandmates are like, dude, how did you do that? And all I'm doing is I'm just disarming the police officer by showing the police officer that I am not a threat.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a powerful example. And also, you're talking a little bit about, you know, you're taking a critical race theory class right now. we obviously, I think most white people don't have to think about this kind of thing at all. And there's, of course, the it's not fair, right? It's not. And some people would get fatigued from having to do this kind of thing over and over every time to kind of show that you're not a threat, whereas other times people are assumed not to be a threat. So what do you say to that, or how do you respond to that issue?
Well, first off, I'm never going to negate the fact that it sucks. It's BS. I mean, speaking frankly, it's bullshit that some people are profiled differently than others. So my thoughts here on getting pulled over are not to say you're going to get out of every ticket. It's not to say that it's right that you're profiled and pulled over. Like, I don't think it's cool. It sucks getting pulled over. And it sucks getting pulled over when you know you're just getting pulled over because you're black or you're BIPOC or whatever, because that's happened before too. You know, it sucks. And the moral of the story and the whole reason why I would ever talk about this is just, it's the lessons that, like, not necessarily save you from the ticket, but it's the lessons that you can learn that save you from the next step of, like, okay, step out of the car. Oh, you got an attitude, step out of the car, or let me grab my wallet. Don't move your hands, but whatever it all is, you know, like getting a gun pulled on you, like I wouldn't even know what to do. You know what I mean? Like, so all these little tricks or like methods I'm talking about are to prevent those, the next step. It's just like, let the situation stay as, you know, as non-physical or non-confrontational as possible, you know, and sure, you might get a ticket if you're speeding. I'm not going to say you're not going to get a ticket, but you're going to drive away safely. And I mean, all these different little things are traumatizing. Like getting put in the back of a police officer's car or police car, or even handcuffed at all, that's that you're never going to forget that stuff. So if you can avoid that stuff by doing these little things, you know, that's like the key to it. And that's what Blaine, my best friend, was teaching us. Like, don't put yourself in that position. All right, cool, you got pulled over. Okay, now do everything you can in your power to empower the police officer to let you drive away or walk away or whatever the situation is. This goes for like any interaction with police. If you, I guess it sounds silly, but it's like if you can disarm the police officer with your personality, your attitude, and showing you're not a threat, as lame as it is, that's the way it is. But the world's not going to change like tonight. Like, African-Americans or BIPOC folks are still going to get pulled over and profiled. But if you can just protect yourself and give yourself the best situation, give yourself the best chance of success of walking away and then going to your family at the end, I think it's a win.
Thank you. I appreciate, you know, the depth of that response. We know that this weekend, or sorry, it's not quite this weekend, but this month rather, the trial for Kim Potter, that's the officer who shot Dante Wright in Minneapolis this summer after he was pulled over for an air freshener in the window. And yeah, I wonder, like, I don't know, as you, and this is not to say in any, not at all to conflate him with, you know, whether or not he complied, it sounds like he did. But I mean, what do you think about as you see cases like, you know, Dante Wright's case, where the officer seems like perhaps she was overzealous, she pulled her gun instead of her taser. It sounds like maybe that's true because she was saying taser, and she shot him with a gun. So also, what do you want police? If you could, you know, you mentioned that you lived with or around friends and were around police officers much of your life. So what would you also like them to consider in these kinds of interactions?
Well, not everyone, and this is quoting Blaine, like, literally, my friend is a sergeant, or old ex-sergeant. Like, not everyone's a criminal, okay? So I understand that you have to go into every situation assuming the worst because you're a police officer and you're, like, there, you know, like, it sucks, but you are, like, taught to assume the worst, you know? And to protect yourself and the people around you, like, you know, I get it. But if you can do your best to assume the best of people without profiling, it's a really tough question, to be honest, because it's like, I get that that a police officer has to go up protecting themselves 100%. Like, I totally get that, you know, but it's just like, if there could be a way where we could not assume that every single person is a criminal. I know the argument right back is going to be like, well, what happens if they are a criminal, and what happens if they do have a gun? All the things, like, I get it. I know, but I if we could find a way to do that, and I honestly think that one of the easiest ways to do that would fall back on the person getting pulled over, and that's doing these little things, like just doing all you can to show that you're not a threat, even if you are drunk, or even if you have something in the car you shouldn't have, or something like that. If you can just soften yourself to the point where the police officer doesn't have to feel so whatever, you know. I know it's weird because I just kind of put it back on the person getting pulled over, which is not fair, but I don't know. I don't think you can unteach the police officer that are on the street right now. Maybe you could teach people there and cadets or whatever moving up. I don't know how that works, but I can tell you this much. If you could, if a police officer or any person, I mean, we all have little things of judgment in our lives. So if we could all do our best to assume the best of people, that's something I've definitely learned in working with the House of Shelter. Like, assume the best of all of our participants. Like, assume that they want to get better. Assume whatever it is that they don't want to steal to live or whatever, you know. Like, if we can all do our best to assume the best of humans in general, I think that's going to put us all in a better place. I know that that isn't necessarily probably going to vibe with a bunch of police officers out there, but
that's okay. Can't please everybody. And then, like, of course, you don't know the specifics of this case. I don't either. We weren't there. But so for Officer Kim Potter, who grabbed her gun instead of her taser, which is similar to what happened when Oscar Grant lost his life, or similar to what the officer said happened when he Johannes Meserle grabbed a taser instead of a gun with Oscar Grant's death. I think in Wright's case, like, he might have been, I forget why she made him leave the car, like, in the first place. I'm not sure. I think he was on the phone with his mother. Like, what would you, I don't know. I'm thinking, even if there's a yoga practice technique or something about really living in the present instead of going into that very, like, hyped up, kind of almost, it sounds like an adrenaline place that sometimes these officers might go to when they make a quick mistake, but it costs somebody their life. So I don't know if there's anything that you'd want to say to that specific officer, if you could have talked to her before it all happened.
Well, you know, AHIMSA is like the practice of nonviolence, not hurting anything, not even like a fly or whatever. That's something that through yoga teacher training that I've been trying my best to really adopt in. And, like, for example, like, doing my best to not, like, kill flies or any of these kind of annoying little pests in my life, you know, like letting the spider out the window, like trying to shoo it away versus killing it or something, just little things like that.
Are you vegetarian? I have to ask.
I am vegetarian. I'm like a full, I'm a plant-based pescatarian. So, like, I'm really fit, or not fit, but I'm really active. So I do my best to get as much protein as I can. So I eat fish and salmon and tuna and stuff, but sardines. But this is so tough because I know the police officers have to be on their guard. But it's like, if we can assume the best and then also assume the best of people. But then at the same time, like, keep the idea of AHIMSA in your mind, like the act of nonviolence, not hurting anything. And then also, like, the mindfulness that comes with the practice of yoga, that's wonderful, that's definitely changed my life, is, like, being in each present moment. Like, not every single person is a criminal, and not every single person, every situation is a life or death, you know, and not every single BIPOC individual is up to no good, or whatever is being assumed, you know. That's something that I can definitely say would help, but I know a police officer and, like, police academies are not going to start saying, like, don't assume the best of people, I guess.
Right.
This is not going to be a thing.
But we're doing speculative reimagining, and I think that's where all the change begins. So, you know, thanks for leaning into the exercise. I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, at the end of the day, I want to put everyone in the best situation to succeed, whatever that looks like. If that's a police officer assuming the best and being like, oh, wow, I thought this one thing originally, and now I don't. You know, I mean, just like with me. Like, people will see me and assume something, and then I'll like speak to their group or something like that, and they're like, oh, wow, you're so much different than I thought you'd be. You know, I can't tell you how many times in my life I've heard those comments, like, whoa, like, I didn't realize that you're going to be like that.
Do you push back and do you say, oh, how did you think I would be? Or do you just leave it?
No, I just smile. I just smile and say, all right, cool, man. It's all good. You know, because honestly, it's like, if I fought that battle, it would just be like an ongoing battle. And I don't want to make people feel bad, because I think that every human, you know, has a little bit of judgment, even when you're not trying to be judgmental. The nicest human in the world, I think, judges a little bit, you know. So I don't take it personally anymore. I get it all the time in music, like, oh, you're in a band, dude? Oh, cool. Like, what, like reggae? No, I'm in a super heavy, pissed off metal band that has not a single singing lyric. Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I get a lot, like, when we're doing the speaking stuff, like, when I go speak to, like, I don't know, young adults in some way, like, or even teaching yoga at a freaking yoga studio in Portland, and I have, like, a black dude with tattoos on their neck and stuff, but then I speak and I, like, lead the class, and then what people will assume at first is a lot different when they leave the class, you know?
That's awesome. I want to be mindful of your time, too, because I know you have to get to another thing, but before I let you go, I want to also ask you for, you know, just your perspective on this. We know that protests happened in Portland, right? Like not that long ago, and heated, and then also Wisconsin, right? And then we had Kyle Rittenhouse, who shows up with an assault rifle, kills people, and now he walks without a single charge, free on all counts. My roots are in Wisconsin. I posted something on Facebook saying, is anybody protesting? I want to hear from you. And then I had there's kind of some trolls who I went to high school with who are like, oh, this is a really great, you know, success for Second Amendment rights. And I can't even believe that we're having this conversation. I had some people posting some things like that and many on the other side. But what do you take away from this for people who are feeling pretty defeated, right, to see something that looks like almost an act of white supremacy and the person not getting any sort of consequence? What does this worry, like, what worries do you have about that, or what's your perspective on what we could take away from this moment?
Well, what worries me, I guess, first off, would just be that, you know, this is national news, this is worldwide news, so that unfortunately shows a bunch of people a bunch of different things, you know, and that means that there's a lot of people out there that are going to see this and maybe think like, oh, fuck, I can get away with that too, or something like that. Or, you know, the other side of it's like, oh, so if you're white, you can do whatever you want, you know? And like, I have a critical race theory class, and I have some of the most intelligent people in my class. And it's like, it's incredible. This girl, my LA yesterday, just like, dropped a hammer on like what it was that she saw and how she's taking this, and she was really emotional about it, and it was really compelling, or just really like it gave me chills like three times. But she was just talking about, you know, the white privilege involved in the situation, and then like how the power of like, well, he shot white people, you know, but it's still like laws, and the fact that he was under 18 at the time, all these different things. And she was just like dropping the hammer, and I was just, like I said, I got chills a few times when she was saying this, because she was so passionate about it. But it's like, oh man, it's just really tough, because what it shows the world is that if you're one way, you can kind of do what you want, and then if you're another way, you cannot. And that's extremely, I don't even think unfair is the right word for it, but it's just, I don't know, I'm pretty bummed out. I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty bummed out. I'm more bummed out for people like my Ella in my class that are like very, very passionate and followed all this, you know, and are very disappointed in the verdict, and it's just kind of showing how there's no change really. Like, I'm unfortunately, like the George Floyd thing, like it sucks that, you know, all that thing was just absolutely horrible. But that's just like one tiny situation that went one way, and normally it goes the other way. You know what I mean? So it's like, where's the justice in all of this? You know?
Right. Well, and then I can't let you go without talking about this because you're a runner too, and you run in a community that, you know, you said you get looks, and you feel like you have to make sure you make an extra effort to show that you're soft so that people won't be threatened. And then we have Ahmed Aubrey. How do I pronounce his name? I'm forgetting his name. Say again.
I think it's Audrey, right? I can't remember. I can't pronounce
it. It's like Ahmed Aubrey or something like that, yeah. Who, you know, a couple of white men take it upon themselves to follow him and then kill him. And, you know, that trial's also going on right now. Yeah, just anything you want to add on that, or is it kind of more of the same?
Well, I'll tell you this much. Like, I remember my roommate back, or when this happened, my roommate, Anthony, is an African-American man from Georgia. And he's like, can't leave me on. And I was like, oh, crap. Like, he told me, he showed me and all this, and I was weird, just blown away. And what he said that really, you know, resonated with me that day, he said, dude, they went, like, hunting. Well, just, I don't know if this is, I can just say this or not, but I'll just say what he said.
Yeah, go for it.
He said they went nigger hunting. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, you're so right. Like, that's exactly what they were doing. It was really, 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 I don't know. Sorry, what else to say, but like, it's so fucked up. And I was just like blown away watching this video, and that it took so long for anything to happen. People were passing it off. And I was just like, what the fuck? Like, if this was any person, like almost any other color, this would not be a situation. But then running in Portland, I usually run between like 4 and 5 in the morning. Right. So I was like, any headlights after that, I got really weary. And it was like a while before I realized, like, I'm cool. But I was like, for, I don't know, maybe like even a couple of months, I was really wary of running. And anytime the headlights would come, I would eye the car. I would dial the car, like whatever the car was. Like if headlights are coming behind me and they passed me, or if because it was dark out, you know? So like, it made me afraid for sure. Absolutely. It made me super, super self-conscious about running at night or in the early morning. And it was, I don't know, and like now in Moraga, I'm not really as worried about that per se, but I notice the looks, I notice the steps to the right or to the side of the road, I notice the hey, how you doing to the runner running past me that doesn't acknowledge me. It's okay, like I get it. And I've also learned like the passing part of it. Like, the passing with me is that, you know, I'm guessing people are like, oh, we must go to St. Mary's. Or, like, a lot of the times, like, I run to the grocery store and I have a backpack that says St. Mary's on it, you know? So it's, like, almost like my rite of passage for an African-American to be running in your neighborhood. You know what I mean? So
you're going to be, I'm guessing you'll be watching with interest to see what the outcome of this trial will be, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I just can't believe how long it's taken to even get here. I don't know. I mean, like, we didn't even see it. The freaking news didn't even get it for, like, a long time. Because, like, I can't remember which the role is, but they were passing it. Like, no one was, like, taking it. Was it district attorney? Is that what it is? That was, like, all these, I can't remember the
I think
the,
so. Yeah.
Yeah. They're, like, all passing up. Like, no one wanted to touch it. It's like, dude, what? Like, this is, like, literally a hunting situation. Like, people do that to deer. And they did it to a human. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, so we've covered a lot. I could probably keep you on and talk to you for 2 more hours, but I won't do that to you. So I've talked a lot about your worries and about your work. What continues to give you hope as you do this work in the face of, you know, things like Kyle Rittenhouse not being held accountable? You know, these other examples that are piling on even as we speak, I'm sure. What gives you hope?
What gives me hope is the fact that, like, well, knowledge, I guess I'd say knowledge is powerless without action, you know? So the more and more we teach and the more and more we can show people what's cracking, like, the better off we are, you know. And then also, like, with just like my own personal piece of like sharing my stories in my race logs in my class, in critical race theory class, like, it's showing people, like, because a lot of people don't know what it's like to present the way I do. So, like, when I do explain things, they're like, oh, like, so I'm giving them knowledge on what it's like to be on the other side of it. Like, a quick little story, like, I went, like, a retreat type thing with my friend, and it was in, like, Washington State and kind of the backwoods, and she was talking about going walking, and I was like, whoa, like, were you want us to walk around here? She's like, yeah, we're going to walk through these trails. And I was like, I gotta let you know, like, I don't know the gun laws around here. Like, I don't know what it's like around here. And she was just like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, because, you know, there are not too many black folks around here. And if their gun laws are, like, if I'm trespassing and they can shoot me, like, I'm not taking that risk, you know? And it took her for a little bit to realize what I was talking about. But then she realized, like, holy crap, like, I had never in a million years thought about that. Like, my privilege has allowed it, so I didn't have to ever think about that, and you do. And she's like, I'm really sorry you have to think about that. But I'm like, yeah, well, that's just like what it is. Like, I have to think about that kind of stuff. I can't just go around. But the thing is the educational piece is there, so now she's more aware. And if we can make more and more people aware, that can just only help us, you know, help us as a society, not just like as BIPOC people, you know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I mean, I think, you know, you talk about your intersectional identity, and I think, you know, I always talk with people about, like, the nuances of identity. You could be privileged by one aspect and marginalized by another, but regardless what, like, you know, even if a white person is marginalized by class or something, this area is something that there's no disputing. This is an area that, like, I don't think anybody outside of a person of color who's been profiled, who has to think about, oh, I can't go on this trail because somebody could shoot me. Like, it's just such a poignant example that I think, in the most basic level of privilege, but also, you know, it's a matter of life and death, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm not tripping out Moraga per se, but, like, there are times when, like, in Portland, like, well, I'm just cautious, you know, because, I mean, yeah, sure, there's a lot of protests in Portland, but, I mean, there's really only one area in town where there are African-American people, and it's in Northeast where I live, and then it's also in, I guess, technically North Portland, so these two, like, communities are, like, really the only place where African-Americans are. So running in these areas, like, I guess, I don't know, like, if I were running in Southeast Portland, for example, like, I probably wouldn't run in the dark, you know? I shouldn't, that's not fair of me to say. Or if I was, like, in some place called, like, Oregon City, where it's, like, out a little bit more rural, like, I probably wouldn't do that, because I don't know what people are going to do, like, and I don't trust it, you know? But,
yeah,
you know, and Moraga, I'm not really tripping too hard, but I think it's just kind of unfortunate that people are, the diversity around here is at St. Mary's College. And then you can drive 12 miles towards the west and you get to Oakland. There's some diversity there. But everything else, it's just not here.
Okay, two last questions and then I'll let you go. So one is, there's this whole national campaign to push back on critical race theory. And I'm just noticing that you've probably referenced it 7 or 8 times in this conversation. So for the folks who are pushing back saying critical race theory should not be in school, and because they're saying things like it makes white people feel bad, or it makes them uncomfortable, or it shares a narrative that's quote unquote not helpful, how would you respond to that?
I would just ask, like, why would we not teach the truth? Like, why would we not teach a part of the world that we went through? Like, sure, maybe it's embarrassing, or maybe it makes people feel bad, but it's the truth. Like, you know, it's just, I just don't understand why we would, like, doctor history, you know? Like, I just don't understand that. Like, I don't understand how, we often talk about this in our critical race theory class, and every time I kind of just chuckle because I'm like, why would we not talk about this? Like, why? Like, I don't know. It's not, I'm not answering your question very well. But
no, you did. You answered it actually so perfectly. I love it.
why would we not tell the truth of the matter? Like, I'm just trying to think of an example of like where you, like, I don't know. Like, if I could use like a sports analogy or something like that, like if we didn't explain how the rules of American football came about, I don't have a good analogy, but I'm trying to think of like, if you don't tell the whole truth, then we're not going to know. Like, people aren't going to know, you know, the truth. So if it's going to be assumed, like, it's going to be assumed that things are the way they are because of another way, and it's not the way it is. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but.
No, you already did. I mean, I think you said it with your question, you know? It's like, why would we not tell the truth? Period. Like, I think you got it. Like, it's, I mean, it seems like it's mind-baffling a little bit to you, and it is to me too, so it makes sense. It's like, why would we learn a portion of the truth? So I love it. That's great. Very thorough. And last question is, what's the most important lesson you've learned on your journey thus far, if you had to choose one?
If I had to choose one?
Yes.
Assume the best of people. Yeah, assume the best of people. Like, working in the shelter, I would have people that I thought were ducking me, per se. Like, when I had to do some of their case management stuff, and my boss, Josh, he would be like, Joshua Flynn, he'd be like, so why do you think they're ducking you? I'm like, I don't know. He won't show up to the meeting, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, man, I need you to flip that. Like, I need you to think about, like, assuming the best of people. Assume that whatever they're doing is for their survival, because he explained that every single thing that they had done to this point, you know, has gotten them here, and they're alive. And they're, like, a lot of the people in the situations are, like, in survival mode always. So, because they're not meeting me at my meeting at 1 o'clock to discuss their housing or to get their ID, doesn't mean that person's ducking me or avoiding me or anything. You know, and it's like a form of judging. So I was like judging, well, yeah, they're ducking me. I'm like, no, like, that's not fair of me to assume the worst. So assuming the best of people, assuming that whatever that person is doing in whatever situation, like, I don't know, take it in, like, in school, like, why are our teachers giving us all these things right now? Like, because they didn't do they weren't diligent enough on the, you know, the class schedule. So now they're trying to fit everything in. Or maybe it's like, you know, maybe there's a positive reason behind it. Maybe because they're trying to get us to this point, so then in the next class we take, we have that information. You know, but if we don't assume the best of people, we're constantly always judging and looking at people in, like, a negative light. And that's going to get taxing. And that's going to, like, fatigue everyone. So that would be my thing. Assume the best of people until proven wrong.
Yeah, no, I love it. And at a minimum, don't assume the worst of them if you can't, you know, do that part yet, I think. So, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's hard. I mean, like, there's, dude, I do it to this day, every day. I'm like, I catch myself. It's little things, you know, like road rage situations. Like, people did not using their blinkers. It's like, okay, so maybe someone didn't use their blinker and it kind of annoyed me. But what if that person's dad had just passed away? Or what if something happened and they found out they had cancer that day? They're not worried about the damn blinker. They're just trying to survive and, like, process. But if I'm assuming that they're, like, just being inconsiderate of my time, you know what I mean? Like, little things like that.
Yeah.
It's just.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I love it. Super appreciate it. Anything else you want to add?
Yoga is good for the heart, mind, and soul. And you should listen to more music. That's what it is.
All right. That's what I can. Thank you so much for taking the time.